my name is Alicia Helmrich, and today on Future Cities Podcast, I am the host and the guest. This episode, Centralization and Decentralization of Resilient Infrastructure, pulls from an article that I led, which will be linked in the description. I would also like to give an acknowledgement before I kick off to my co-authors, a number of which who have been on this podcast previously. They include Sam Markoff, Ray Lee, Tomas Carvalis, Yon Kim, Makuth Naharan, Nasir Ahmed, and Mike Chester. Now, it's been a while since I've given myself a proper introduction on here, so let's go ahead and start with that. Since August 2022, I have been an assistant professor at the University of Georgia in the School of Environmental, Civil, Agriculture, and Mechanical Engineering, with an emphasis on the civil and environmental parts. I'm affiliated with the Institute of Resilient Infrastructure Systems, or IRIS, here at UGA, and my own research focuses on urban resilience and navigating periods of stability and instability, and particularly from a systems point of view. I really love research that focuses on a synthesis across disciplines. This interdisciplinary collaborative space is where I really thrive. Now, probably worth a tangent of its own, interdisciplinary research isn't easy. In brief, though, it's difficult because it requires experts from different fields with different approaches, biases, and assumptions, where they all need to work together to solve complex problems. And this creates a lot of challenges in communication and in collaboration while trying to achieve this mutual understanding. The process at large requires new ways of thinking while questioning your own assumptions, which can be really uncomfortable. So this bridging of disciplinary boundaries and integrating different knowledge domains really requires a significant effort to achieve. And within the institutions that at least that I exist within, such as funding agencies, academic institutions, scientific journal publications, these aren't always structured to support interdisciplinary research, leading to barriers in funding, recognition, and dissemination of interdisciplinary research outcomes. But despite all of these challenges, interdisciplinary research is incredibly rewarding because you do get to tackle these multifaceted, complex problems from a multitude of perspectives while simultaneously pushing for innovation and real-world impact. And I find that incredibly rewarding. And so this tangent, anyway, is warranted because the work I'm presenting here on today's episode falls into this interdisciplinary space. So let's understand some context. This podcast is focused on all things around urban resilience, but that is a broad topic, as can be seen throughout our catalog of episodes that have ranged from air quality last month to a plethora of green infrastructure episodes, thanks to Urex and Natura's sponsorship, as well as to environmental justice and to urban ecology, so on and so on. Here, I will be focusing on infrastructure systems in particular, of the scheme of urban resilience, where infrastructure systems are the physical networks as well as the governing institutions. Infrastructure today are faced with accelerating volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. A few examples. Cyber technologies. Cyber technologies are being integrated into legacy infrastructure at a rapid pace, creating new opportunities but also vulnerabilities. There's climate change. Climate change is creating deep uncertainty for weather extremes and threatening to exceed design envelopes of our infrastructure systems. Aging infrastructure. Aging infrastructure in the United States is increasingly confronted with these new challenges and must adapt with scarce resources such as funding to meet demand and deliver services. Therefore, infrastructure are really caught between goals, administrative structures, and technologies rooted in the past and a future defined by complexity, uncertainty, and just this general accelerating change. So the two domains of infrastructure that I mentioned in brief, the physical networks and the governing institutions, are super important when examining the capacities of our infrastructure systems to adapt and transform, or to be resilient. What we, well, myself and all you listening, are going to focus on today is on the spectrum from centralization and decentralization within these demands of physical networks and governing institutions of our infrastructure systems. Which leads to the first question. What does it mean for infrastructure to be centralized? Decentralized? This single prompt was the motivation behind our research. While the terms centralization and decentralization are pervasive across infrastructure literature and discourse, particularly regarding how they may support or hinder adaptive and transformative capacities towards resilience. But there is not, or was not, a concerted effort to align how these concepts are used. What do I mean by that? Well, it comes back to how did you define centralized or decentralized infrastructure? You may have thought of the physical network, or you may have thought of the governing institutions. Maybe you thought of both, since I had already introduced infrastructure systems as including both of these domains. The issue that we found was that when the domains of centralization and decentralization were introduced in literature, they assumed that the reader was considering either the physical or institutional components without explicitly addressing that assumption or necessarily that the other domain existed. You see how this is tying back to our brief tangent on interdisciplinary research? Our experience biases our viewpoint. Now, I am here saying that centralization and decentralization are used without clear definitions, and I haven't provided you any definitions. So let's dive into what these configurations look like. And here, I will disclaim, viewing the article, again, linked in the description, may be helpful since there are figures provided there. And this is an audio podcast, so you have to rely on my ability to describe these interconnections with words, but I will give it a go. So broadly for physical networks, centralization is often associated with networks distinguished by a small number of producers, for example, water treatment plants, serving a large number of consumers, so say you at your home. In this configuration, a single node may be extremely vulnerable because it alone provides service to a number of consumers with no redundancy. Meanwhile, a decentralized system is where that ratio of producers to consumers increases. It places a lesser reliance across nodes, across the producers, thereby decreasing vulnerability. There's a model that a lot of people are familiar with, and that's airports. Some airlines run a hub and spoke model, where there is a central hub that all the flights route through. This would be representative of a centralized model. Meanwhile, there are airports that run direct flights from destination to destination, and this would be representative of a decentralized model. Now, this particular example is really interesting because the planes can be routed differently. The different airlines are working with the same airports, so the same physical structure, but it's about how they're scheduling those planes to fly amongst those different airports. And if time allows, maybe we'll dive a little bit more into this, as I'm sure many of you can recall the disaster that happened with Southwest earlier this year. But I digress. I do want to throw one more wrench into this system, and that is distributed systems. This term emerges originally in computer science, it appears, and a distributed system is one where the nodes in a network work towards a common goal. So this includes the producers and the consumers. Our team described this configuration as a subset of decentralization, where consumers are provided with a larger variety of service options, so a larger variety of producers, and are connected with other consumers to help achieve an objective. So, for example, in the power sector, you could install residential solar panels that may produce excess energy, which can supply the grid or be stored in electric vehicles or other batteries and used or released back to the grid at a later time, especially, say, during emergencies. Under this configuration, the consumer becomes a coordinating node to help manage supply and demand across the entire system. Now we're going to flip gears a little bit and look at governance. And generally, centralization and decentralization look the same for governance. In centralized structures, power is primarily held by select individuals, while decentralization is a dispersion of this power across the organization. This dispersion can be horizontal or vertical. There is vertical dispersion of power when there is power down a chain of command, your typical bureaucracy. Power can also be spread horizontally, with reallocation of power across, say, different divisions within an organization. So what does this all mean for our infrastructure systems? Well, given a growing interest in configuring infrastructure to better respond to increasingly complex environments, a coherent framing of centralization, decentralization, and distributed is needed. So you may be wondering, how are our infrastructure systems configured? Broadly, modern infrastructure systems in the US and many other developed nations emerged to meet the rapidly increasing demand for services brought on by industrialization and subsequent urbanization. Large-scale centralized infrastructure systems were created to provide basic services to citizens while taking advantage of economies of scale to reduce costs. Now, this is contrary to a decentralized system, which leverages economies of scope to enable multifunctionality and flexibility. While our team was researching how the terms centralization and decentralization are used across water, power, and transportation infrastructure, we found the spectrum of centralized to decentralized networks is often characterized by proximity to resources, capacity of distribution, volume of product, and number of connections. These definitions vary across the three infrastructure sectors assessed. As for the degree of centralization and decentralization of governance, it was largely characterized by the number of actors who hold decision-making power. Notably, governance structures are often overlooked in infrastructure literature regarding centralization and decentralization. Now, I really do apologize for the number of times I have, and will continue to say, centralization and decentralization. We managed to come up with a little acronym for the paper, but it does not translate out loud. Now, back on track, I have been referring to centralization and decentralization as a spectrum, not a binary. And that is because there does not appear to be clear boundaries between centralized and decentralized configurations, but instead that a gradient is applicable where the degree of centralization to decentralization is inherently relative to the geographic and operational scale or level of complexity of the infrastructure systems. Each configuration or combination thereof can be found across infrastructure sectors. I'll step through a brief example for each configuration. You can have a centralized network and governance configuration. For instance, water management, thinking of drinking water or wastewater, is largely characterized by legacy centralized treatment facilities and sprawling distribution networks to connect consumers while being governed by their respective municipalities for efficiency. The centralized configuration has historically been implemented in times of stability to increase efficiency. There's also the centralized network and decentralized governance configuration. For instance, the Central Arizona Project. It distributes surface water throughout Arizona, and the water allocations are governed and managed through international agreements, federal laws, state and tribal rights, and local coalitions that represent various stakeholders. Another setup would be a decentralized network and centralized governance, as seen with ride sharing. Here, autonomy is granted to drivers and riders while operating within a collective network that provides some sort of oversight. Finally, there is a decentralized network and governance configuration. Continuing with this theme of transportation, you can think of informal transit services. These emerge to relieve demand on public transport services, oftentimes catering to underserved populations, where individuals are operating passenger vehicles independently for a livelihood in an aggressive environment. All right, so centralization and decentralization mean different things in terms of network and governance, and across infrastructure sectors for at least water, power, and transportation. Super confusing, right? Well, try working your way through literature on infrastructure resilience. This is where we were particularly fascinated. Generally, centralized systems are viewed as potentially less resilient, while decentralized systems are viewed as potentially more resilient, oftentimes with the implication of being either network or governance. But this is applied across the infrastructure sectors. And so now we know that centralization and decentralization are defined differently for the network, for governance, for water, for power, for transportation. So what are we referring to when we say that centralization or decentralization is better or worse for infrastructure resilience? Now, I will briefly disclaim how I'm defining infrastructure resilience. I am defining infrastructure resilience as the ability of infrastructure to respond and change to known and unknown disturbances. Centralized systems have been deemed more vulnerable to failure than their decentralized counterparts due to their fail-safe approach and lack of redundancy. Decentralized infrastructure are frequently depicted as systems that service local consumers through redundancy within their network, and the network redundancy is seen as a principle of resilience. Decentralization also provides an opportunity for modularity, or the capability to readily adapt or scale a system by reorganizing individual technical or institutional components without significantly disrupting the overall system. For example, smart grids increase information flows to identify and respond to network component failures. Decentralized infrastructure systems may limit cascading failures amongst infrastructure sectors by quickly recognizing and isolating the failure. They could turn off that modular section, for instance. However, across these studies of decentralization and centralization for resilient infrastructure, there is recognition that while decentralized networks are frequently promoted for increased resilience, there are situations in which centralization can also be beneficial. For instance, balancing budget, reliability, and network size. There is less exploration of centralization and decentralization in governance as related to infrastructure systems. However, complexity leadership and organizational science literature assert that the ability to transition between centralization and decentralization, vertically and horizontally, is crucial for long-term viability because this flexibility allows organizations to traverse between modes of exploitation, or business as usual, and exploration, or innovation. This concept has been applied to infrastructure systems and literature, and I'll link some of my own work, Navigating Exploitative and Explorative Leadership in Support of Infrastructure Resilience, in the description. That article was inspired by the research I'm discussing now. You can also refer to an earlier podcast, Complexity Leadership, from April 1st, 2021, with Dr. Mary Yulbeen, who coined the term enabling leadership, for more insight. Now, to provide more nuance to this discussion of centralization and decentralization for resilient infrastructure, our team proposed a dynamic, multidimensional framing of centralization and decentralization through a coupled network governance perspective with information as a mediator. So this goes along to all the discussions we've been having up to this point, but this is another instance where I recommend looking at the figures in the paper and figure 5 specifically to really understand how this may all be linking together, and just another great opportunity for anybody who's a visual learner. We propose this framework because we hope that the perspective gained from this framing motivates infrastructure managers to identify and consider trade-offs of different configurations along both the network and governance spectrums in their design process. There are two important considerations when applying such a framework. First, the classification of centralized and decentralized networks in governance relies heavily on context, specifically scale, and we saw this when we were exploring those different examples of network and governance configurations for centralized, decentralized. So having that centralized network governance structure for the water management, or having that decentralized network governance structure for the informal ride sharing services that individuals may be offering in that highly competitive environment. When we're looking at the scale of the problem, it adjusts how we're seeing the system as either centralized or decentralized. Second, context is further complicated by information flow, which I did just introduce here, but we haven't fully explored. So the idea is coupling legacy infrastructure with emerging information communication technologies. For example, the Internet of Things or artificial intelligence. This accelerates the capacity for distributed networks by increasing node connections and providing near real-time information and producing adaptive capacity that was not previously achievable. For instance, traffic maps. Traffic maps have evolved to integrate wireless and GPS data to warn users, drivers, you, when you're out on the road, of real-time traffic jams and provide alternative routes. Another example, similarly, smart grids are growing capacity to monitor and manage electricity consumption through smart charging, taking advantage of non-peak hours and renewable energy sources to improve service. Information flows must be recognized as an increasingly powerful force, and these forces are able to forge new connections between the producers and the consumers, as well as other emerging stakeholders such as activists and lobbyists. But this information flow also has the ability to mediate existing relationships between governing bodies, infrastructure networks, and consumers. By empowering more producers and/or consumers with information, and therefore sense-making, as well as decision-making power to act, a system can more readily respond to instances of instability or failure. So this framing helps us better understand the aforementioned nuance of centralization and decentralization for resilient infrastructure systems and complexity. We used Biggs et al.'s 7 key principles of resilience from 2012 to help navigate centralization and decentralization as a spectrum for resilience. Let me step through the 7 principles as they relate to this spectrum. First, we have maintained diversity and redundancy. From a network perspective, this can be achieved through redundancy or modularity, which can be achieved in centralized or decentralized configurations, although more response diversity may be feasible through decentralization. From a governance perspective, decentralization can create a system of checks and balances and promote response diversity rather than letting one perspective steamroll the decision-making process. Second, manage connectivity. A decentralized configuration is likely more beneficial toward resilience for both networks and governance when trying to achieve this principle. Decentralized and distributed configurations simply by definition utilize connectivity as a tool. Third, manage slow variables and feedbacks. A centralized governance may actually have more resources to monitor and build and the ability to collectively respond to larger temporal and spatial scales. So here, the network is less of a focus because it's more relevant regarding how it is being managed to collect this information and respond to it over time and over space. Fourth is to foster complex adaptive systems thinking. There is not a centralized or decentralized answer to this. Networks and governances need to address complexity at an appropriate scale for a particular problem, regardless of what network or governance configuration that they have in place. Fifth, encourage learning. Again, decentralization is favored here because there is a larger opportunity for learning to occur in networks and governance when there are more perspectives or opportunities. For instance, if several microgrids are being managed by different entities, they can share their experiences versus if there was one grid available at that locality. Or if there are several individuals within an organization working on a problem, you can learn from their perspectives to help find a solution. 6 is broaden participation. For networks, consistency of centralization could lower participation barriers. But if either centralization or decentralization can increase availability for accessibility of a service, this would broaden participation. However, for governance, pulling back to that idea of learning, decentralized configurations increase the number of decision makers and broaden participation, again, by definition. Finally, 7th, promote polycentric governance. We do not relate this to physical networks. However, this is an example of centralized and decentralized governance. Governance operates in this case, in nested scales with multiple autonomous yet overlapping decision-making processes. So by managing the contributions of networks, governance, and information flows towards centralization and decentralization, infrastructure managers can increase their opportunity to address instability and infrastructure resilience as something more gray than black and white. As we saw just now, simply high level stepping through these 7 principles of resilience, centralization didn't wipe the board for networks or for governance, and neither did decentralization. There's a lot more nuance than that. as infrastructure managers pursue adaptation strategies to respond to increasing complexity in infrastructure systems and their environments. The managers will need to confront existing configurations of networks and governance and critically examine the benefits and trade-offs of centralized and decentralized configurations. So let me summarize the last 20 minutes or so. While existing framings of centralization and decentralization may be polysemic, recounseling these framings expands infrastructure managers' design space to include both network and governance domains, increasing the opportunities for adaptation and transformation for infrastructure systems. It is critical that governance is also observed as a domain of centralization and decentralization. Emerging technologies that allow for rapid information sharing provide an opportunity to empower producers, as well as consumers, with decision-making capabilities to respond with speed and flexibility in instances of failure. This integration of information changes infrastructure systems from centralized or decentralized to distributed. This increases the number of decision makers in a system, which adds complexity along with flexibility and confronts fundamental assumptions of who holds power. Centralization is dominant in today's infrastructure systems, but all three configurations, centralized, decentralized, and distributed, are at times appropriate for supporting resilience capacities because, one, infrastructure sectors have different priorities and therefore different solutions will be needed to meet each context, and two, each configuration has varying abilities to respond to stability and instability. This reframing of centralization and decentralization challenges infrastructure managers to develop new mental models. And likewise, institutions need to create new collective cognition. Reimagining centralization and decentralization as a spectrum may help infrastructure managers navigate infrastructure systems through periods of instability by assessing and reassessing these configurations to increase actionable pathways forward for infrastructure resilience. With that, I would like to again thank my co-authors. And now, as I do ask everyone else to provide a haiku, I must lead by example. So I will be signing off with this haiku. Connected nodes, central hub or web-like sprawl, infrastructure grows. The Future Cities podcast is an outreach effort brought to you by Natura-based solutions for urban resilience in the Anthropocene, or Natura. To learn more, please visit www.natura-net.org. If you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions for future episodes, you can email us at futurecitiespodcast@gmail.com or find us on Twitter at futurecitiespod. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time.